Hi everyone, Ruben Dinarena here. I'm really excited today to interview Joseph Valente. Has a really interesting career journey actually, and stories to share that will hopefully inspire young people to see things from a slightly different perspective and also think big. So just a bit of background on Joseph. Joseph Valente is a member of the Forbes 30 Under 30 list, and also the winner of the BBC's The Apprentice series, where he partnered with Lord Sugar for his business Infragas, which is a multi-million pound boiler installation company, which Joseph recently sold when it was turning over just about 10 million. Joseph is now the CEO of Trade Mastermind, which is set up really to support one-man bands, sole traders and SMEs in the construction industry. So Joseph, thanks for agreeing to make this happen.
No problem, Ruben. Thanks for having me on. We're really looking forward to it.
Awesome. So let's, to start off with, I would say, let's go back to your time at school. I heard a bit about that you didn't have the best experience in our current educational system. What was your experience like? And did you go to like college, university? Were you interested in business even at that age? Or is that something that developed later on?
So I did okay in primary school up until like year six. Everything was fine. I was always quite intelligent and didn't struggle with education or the lessons in itself. But I suppose when I hit 13 and went into secondary school, and you start to change as an adult, as a young adult, and you become more independent, and you know, you start to bring out who you actually are, I found it very, very challenging to deal with authority. I didn't like being told what to do. I didn't agree with a lot of the lessons that we were being taught, where, you know, you were definitely no good at that specific subject, or you were never going to be able to get any better at it, but yet you're still graded and told that you're no good at doing that specific thing. And I always bring the subject of art. I can't draw. I'll never be able to draw. So there's no point keep grading me as an F student in art. I know I'm crap at drawing. And you don't have to tell me. So I didn't like doing things like that. I felt like it was a very much waste of my time. And that made me react in a way where I was quite disruptive and quite challenging. And, you know, I found it very difficult. But I also had a lot going on in my home life at the time, which was very, very disruptive. So that kind of wasn't helping who I was when I went to school either. I just couldn't get on. I couldn't get on. And, you know, from an entrepreneurial trait, we are very independent. We only like to do what we want to do. Yeah. We know what we're good at and know what we're bad at. And, you know, I didn't see, once I'd learned the basics of everything, I didn't see like there was any more value for me in continuing to do humanities or geography or whatever it was. So, you know, I was quite disruptive. I played up a lot and I ended up being expelled when I was 15.
Yeah, that story really resonates with me actually too, because when I was doing my GCSEs at secondary school, there was only a handful of subjects I was really passionate about and interested in, and I would much prefer to focus on those rather than all the other subjects like history, geography, because at the end of the day, there's only so much that you're going to use. So I agree with your point about how important it is to learn the fundamentals at primary school and everything, but after you get to a certain point, you have to really focus on what you're passionate about. For people that are maybe potentially in that situation right now, what would you say, what would you advise them to do? Would you say that they should get an apprenticeship? Would you say they should start experimenting, starting a business on the side? What advice would you give to people maybe in the similar situation to you at that time?
So I think, you know, my advice would be to do your best to try and get through school. Because I was expelled at 15 and, you know, I could have got through to 16 if I'd have just stayed it out a little bit longer and stopped doing what I was doing. So I try and finish your education system just because, not because I feel that there's value in staying, but I just feel there's value in not causing yourself lots of disruption. Like, I was very good at creating and making things hard for myself. You know, I spent my life making things hard for myself when I haven't needed to. So you end up creating more barriers and more challenges. And, you know, you want an easy life. You want to glide through, or not glide through, but glide upwards. And you don't want to keep having all these challenges. So try and do your best to bear with it. Bite your tongue. understand that you can't always beat the system, and sometimes it's better to work with the system to get through it quickly and cleanly, and then get on to what you want to do when you hit college. You know, when I then I went and approached a local plumber when I was 15 years of age, and when I was at 12, I said, look, can I come and work for you for free for a year, and you teach me everything you know, and then when I'm 16, start paying me and put me in college. That was how I basically added value to somebody, to get value back from them. But when he did that for me, I became a completely different person. I went to work every day. I was on time. I was polite. You know, I listened. I did what I was told. And that was because I wanted to do that. So, you know, you've got to get a focus on something that you want to do and get to that as quickly as possible. You're not going to be able to change the education system. So you either get on with it or you fight it. But fighting it ends up making it harder for you.
Okay, so yeah, that's really good, really good advice. So later on, after a few years, after you did you worked with the plumber and like you did the qualification on the side, how did you find out about the apprentice and Lord Sugar and all of these people? What kind of led you to that?
So because I did the year ahead of everybody else, by the time I was 16, I already knew a lot. And then by the time I was 18 and a qualified plumber, I was already much better than most of the people my age in the industry. And then by the time I was 19, I was earning £40,000 a year. I had a flat, a car, you know, and I was quite successful in my job. I was doing really well for a 19-year-old that had been expelled from school. And I continued to grow within the gas industry and working for companies. And then I got to 21 and I went to Australia and lived there for a year and worked and traveled and had a great time. You know, this is for youngsters. I advise getting away and going seeing the world when you're young. You know, it's very, very, there's so much time to work and have stress and earn money and, you know, live, go see the world, have some freedom, enjoy yourself. And that's an important one. And then I came back from Australia when I was late 21, and I got back into the same job, you know, and I'd been servicing boilers or installing boilers or repairing them for like, you know, 6 or 7 years at this point. And I was earning good money and I had all the stuff that I wanted again. But I remember thinking, you know, is this it for me? Like, is this, I couldn't really go any higher in employment. Is this the rest of my life now? Like, I'm going to just get this wage and I've got to go and do this job every day. Like, I can't deal with that. I can't comprehend that. It was making me miserable. And it came to Christmas 2011, and my mum bought me Lord Sugar's autobiography for Christmas. Now, I wasn't really much of a reader. I hadn't read a book for many, many years, but I was very passionate about The Apprentice. I always wanted to go on it. I always believed I could win if I got on it. And I read that book cover to cover for 3 weeks between Christmas and New Year. And reading that book changed my life. It was instrumental in creating the new version of me. It changed my mindset, changed my DNA, changed my everything. Because what that book made me realize was that there was a guy from a council estate in London that was able to go on and build billionaire wealth in one lifetime. And I looked at his whole journey throughout his book and how he said he did it and so on. And it was an amazing achievement, but I couldn't really see what he'd done that was that special than what he had that I didn't have. So if he can do it, so can I. And off the back of that spur of the moment belief, I quit my job, took out a £15,000 loan and bought a van and started my very first company, Improget.
So something that you said that kind of struck me was when he said that if you got on The Apprentice, you knew that you could win it. Where do you think that belief comes from? And how were you also so confident to take out loans like 15,000 or like any loan for that matter? Because what was it that you're confident in yourself or
It's a great question. And you know, I believe that anybody that wants to be successful has to, you know, and it sounds cheesy and, you know, one of the things that everybody says, but you have to believe in yourself. And it starts with internal self-belief, but you have to have unwavering self-belief. Like, there can't be room for 5%, 10%, 20% thinking that you're not going to achieve it, because if you do, you'll go into it half-hearted, you know, or not not 100% committed. So then that means automatically there's opportunity for you to fail if you're not 100% in it. So I've always been so 100% sure of every decision that I make, purely on the basis that I know that I will do whatever it takes to win, whatever it takes to succeed. You know, if I commit to it, you know, I get rich or die trying, you know, I will commit everything or I'll die trying to do it. And the belief for me comes from the fact that from a very early age, you know, I didn't, my mum was an amazing woman, you know, but you know, there was nobody every day telling me that I was going to be a champion. There was nobody every day telling me that I was going to be anybody I wanted to be in the world. You know, they weren't parents like that. My dad certainly wasn't like that. So there was nobody motivating me. So, you know, everything I did was always self-driven. And especially when my dad left when I was 13 and I was, you know, in school and I was in trouble all the time and my mum had a new partner. Like, I was on my own pretty much from 13. I left home at 17. So everything I ever decided to do was because I decided to do it. So I had to prove to the world that I was better than they thought I was. But most importantly, I had to prove it to myself. You know, I'm a big believer in destiny. I'm a big believer that we all have, you know, a much greater path than we all believe we have. Yeah. No, not than we all believe we have. But if we believe we had it, we could deliver it. So the belief comes from challenging myself, people not believing in me, but most importantly, being committed. So that's when I knew that taking out that £15,000 loan, it was like, I can't comprehend failure. Like, I can't comprehend it. It doesn't scare me, you know. Yeah. And I always looked at it like, so what? If it all bums out, I'll go again. If it all bums out, I'll go again.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have one shot, you know. If it goes, so what? It's water under the bridge. That's it. Move on to the next, on to the next. You sit there and cry about that you failed or it hasn't worked. So what? No one cares. Move on. Go again. Yeah. And then that's the way that you've got to do it. And that, if you can adopt that mindset, it helps you adopt and remove the fear.
One of the things that you were speaking about in your latest video on your YouTube channel was the law of attraction. And I wanted to ask a bit about that, because how important would you say it's been in your life? And if people haven't heard of the law of attraction, could you explain how it works and how you use it in your life?
Excellent. Yeah. So the law of attraction is probably one of the main ingredients to my success. I live, eat, and breathe the law of attraction every single day, still to this moment. And the law of attraction is basically a metaphysical law that means everything that we do in our lives. So as a human being, we are, we send and we receive, you know, we are transmitters. So we send and we receive signals, and everything that your thoughts become things. So you send out to the universe what you want, and if it's positive or negative, you'll receive it. So if you're always crying about how the world's against you, you've got no money, you're in debt, you're not healthy, you'll attract that back, and that's what your life will become. If you're wealthy, if you want to be wealthy, if you're positive, if you want to achieve, you send that out and you attract it, and that's what you will become. So it's about vision. Like this, I'll give you my success philosophy around law of attraction. So the way that I do it is like this. So number one, it begins with vision. Yeah, everything in life begins with a vision. You have to see it in your mind before you can hold it in your hand. So you see and imagine the success and the win and the outcome. Then you feel it. Feeling is very important because it puts you in that moment. So when I won The Apprentice, I felt how it was going to feel to win, the excitement, the buzz, what it was going to look like when he pointed his finger at me saying, you're hired. Then number three is you speak it. Okay, I'm a winner. I won The Apprentice. And then finally, number four, and this goes back to what I was saying a moment ago, is believe. Yeah. You have to believe. When I went on to that show, everybody used to say to me, do you really think you're going to win? 100% I think I'm going to win. Of course I think I'm going to win. Why would you ever enter a competition not believing that you are going to win? Usain Bolt doesn't go and run a race and think that he's going to come second. Yeah. He goes in and he's like, I've got this, right? Yeah, nobody goes in thinking that, oh, I might come second or third. If they do, they will. So I went in there thinking that I was going to do it and speak, believe. There are four actions, and you must use that process against every single one of your goals, and you must repeat it 12 times daily, morning and night.
Yeah, so that's really good, actually. So I actually want to like talk a bit more about this, but I want to clear like one of the misconceptions, though, because I think some people look at videos like The Secret and like Law of Attraction and say, if I just say this, like I'm going to be a millionaire, and then suddenly someone's going to turn up at my door and give me a check for a million. But obviously, you have to put in the work that leads to that. Could you talk more about that? About, yeah, you have to have a big goal, but at the same time, you need to put in the work that's going to get you there.
So the way that I look at it is the law of attraction and the law of action. One doesn't work without the other, yeah? You have to see it, believe it, vision it, and feel it. But then you have to act on that to bring it to fruition and get the two to come together. That's the important part. But people always say that. You know, I've heard exactly what you said a million times as well. Oh, well, so what? You're just going to close your eyes and vision it? No, of course that's not how it works. Don't be stupid. Like, why would anybody believe that that's how it works? We are not saying that's how it works. We are saying that if you vision it, speak it, feel it, believe it, and you act on it, then it will come true. But people want to rubbish it, and they want to destroy it because they don't believe that they can do it. And to any people that haven't heard of the law of attraction, or they aren't quite sold on it, simply ask yourself this. If I type in law of attraction into YouTube, and all I see is successful entrepreneurs, business people, celebrities, filmmakers, actors talking about the law of attraction, and then I go home to my family or my group of friends that aren't successful, right? And then they say, oh, that's a load of magical, mythical, hippie bollocks, right? Then who are you going to believe?
And once I
asked myself that question, I knew that I was going to believe these guys. These are proven it. So you, like, it's already done. You haven't got to work it out and go, does the law of attraction work? What you've got to do is go, yes, it is working. How have they done it? What's their strategy? I'm copying that.
Exactly. So let's move towards like The Apprentice now. So when you're applying for The Apprentice, there's probably, I know there's hundreds of thousands of people that apply. What do you think made you different and stand out from the rest? And also, what advice do you have for people filling in job applications, CVs, to stand out? Because I think this is a really important question for a lot of people. And you've managed to get through all of those hundreds of thousands of people and finally even win the whole The Apprentice. So, what advice do you have for those people that are in that process of applying for things?
Yeah, great question. So my advice is to stand out. It's to be yourself. And if being yourself means that you're outrageous and your personality comes out in whatever way, then do that. I mean, don't be shy to be you. The reason people make mistakes on job adverts or application forms or CVs is because they write generic bollocks, right? Yeah. That they think that everybody wants you to see. Right, every job advert is the same. Every CV reads the same. Ah, look, you read through and it's just the same old bullshit, right? So you've got to be unique. You've got to stand out. When I was the CEO of Infragas, I used to attract top talent to my business by telling them we were going to fit the first boiler on the moon.
Mm.
Yeah? No other company was saying that. We're going to come with me. We'll fit the first boiler on the moon. They're like, holy shit, man, this guy's different to everybody else. So then they wanted it. And then I'd look at them and I'd judge it by character. The reason I got through on The Apprentice was because they saw I made bold statements. You know, I want to be like Hugh Hefner. I like the girls, the cars, the power and the money. The reality is people thought that was BS. That was true. Well, I did want those things. You know, so, I wanted those things at that age. And I still want some of those things now. But, you know, you've got to be brave. You've got to be bold. You've got to be stand out from the crowd. Like, you know, if there's 1,000 of people in a line, why am I going to look at you? You know, what's going to make you stand out? You know, and don't be afraid Like, don't conform. Don't follow what everybody else does. Like, look at a shelf in Tesco's. There's 7 to 8 to 10 loaves of bread. If you were going to buy bread for the first time, which bread would you pick and why? Is it the colour, the packaging, the size, the way that it looks, how far it stands out? Is it the price? You know, you want to be a number of all of those things and get noticed. You've got to get noticed because there's so much competition. Yeah. There's so much competition in everything, right? And to compete, you need to stand out.
Okay. So, perfect. So, when you were actually on The Apprentice, would you say that now that you've worked with Lord Sugar for a couple of years, would you say that he's the same on TV as he is in person? And also, what are some of the biggest lessons you've learned from working with him?
I'd say he's 100% the same person. I'd say he's probably harder in real life than he is on TV. And, you know, it was a very... I had a billionaire business partner when I was 25 years of age.
Yeah, yeah. You know, not many people can say that.
And, I was so lucky and so blessed and very humbled to have that experience. And, I went from being a plumber to a CEO, which was... a pretty cool experience because that's what I always wanted. But the biggest lessons that I learned, how to hold yourself in a boardroom with a billionaire. I can walk into any meeting with any business person in anywhere in the world and I'm confident to speak, to talk, to know my stuff, you know, whereas you go into meetings before that, I remember in the early days of the business, I'd be nervous. Now, once you sat in front of that guy, you ain't nervous anymore. So it helped me become very strong, very confident. Somebody like that, right, wants information delivered in a certain way. They have a lot going on in their mind.
Yeah.
They don't want fluff. They don't want BS. They just want quick, cold, fact answer, straight to the point. So getting information across in the right way. I learned that always understand your margin and always go after a higher margin in business. Was something very, very important. Like, you know, and I say that to a lot of youngsters now, if you're going to go into business, don't go into something that's got crap margin, because you'll still have to do the same amount of work as somebody with big margin, and you'll make a lot less money. So find something with lots of profit, not small profit, because it's a much harder business to run, let me tell you. So that's an important one. They're probably top three.
Cool. And what are the top tips you have for people that want to scale their existing business? Because you turned Infogress and you built that from the ground up. And how difficult was it for you to actually delegate and get other people on and let them have particular positions where you might have done that before?
Okay, so there's two questions there. Number one is how to scale up. So firstly, it starts with the size of the market. Yeah. So how big is the marketplace? You can't scale it up if there's no demand. Yeah. You need the demand. Yeah. So look at how big it is. There's no point trying to sell something and lots of it if people aren't going to buy it. So check the size of the market. Check the demand. Then you need to look at your resources. Can you deliver the scale up that you want? Have you got the right people around you? Have you got the right systems? Have you got the right processes? Have you got the supply chain set up? They're important things to think about. Have you got the cash flow? Is critical. How am I going to be able to fund this? Is it organic? Is it through loans? Is it for investors? And so on. And then finally, have I got the ambition? Because I went from one man in a van to running a national company with 150 people in it. And we operated in every major city in the UK. Now, that was hard.
Yeah.
It was brutal. Running a plant, because mine was physical engineers as well, going out to jobs. It wasn't building a computer and then manufacturing thousands of those units and just shipping them. Every job we did had manual people intervention. So, it was brutal. So have you got the ambition and have you got the gut and the grit and the drive to see it through? Because once you start on that a journey, there is no going back. So you make sure that you're prepared. It isn't easy. Scaling up isn't, right, we're just going to make loads more money. It becomes brutal. But it can be done. And I believe that you should focus on that. And you should focus on growth. And you should try to improve every single day. And everybody's ambition is different. So you don't necessarily have to be national or international. It could be regional, or you could have a couple of shops, or whatever it might be that you want. But make sure that you do what you do for you, not for anybody else. So that answers that one. Then the second one, in terms of being able to delegate. So when I left Impro, I had a lot of senior managers that were getting paid high salaries, that were like 40 to 60 year old people. Yeah. And you know, I'm still 30 at the moment, and they've come from big businesses. And so I think the art of delegation is about you knowing your job role or your industry inside out. So you have to be the master of the job, or of the product, of the business. And then when you delegate, so let's talk about putting in a sales director, for example, because we had direct sales within our business. So when you put that person in, you need to make sure that your interview process is right, that you're checking who they are, what they can do, that they can deliver. And there's a whole host around making sure that, you know, they're suitable for your business, the right culture, you can work with them and so on. But when you delegate, you have to be able to, the only way you can grow is through delegation. So being a control freak is no good. You have to let people run with it. But the way that I look at it is, you imagine putting them in a swimming pool and letting them swim for a little bit. Like when you're a kid, like your parent walks along with you, put their hands on
them,
and you try to let the baby swim, and then you let him go for a little bit. And if he starts to dip, okay, you've got your hands there and you're ready. So, you know, you give them 3 months and you operate in the same way, and you're ready to catch them if they fall. But you have to let them eventually try and swim on their own, because it's the only way that they're going to learn. So it's about keeping a close eye, but not being too micro managing in the strategy. But you'll never grow if you don't delegate, and you can't beat them up the first few times they get it wrong. You only have to do that if they keep repeat offending. So make sure that, you know, you're not brutal with people that get it wrong first time.
And how did you manage to compete with all the bigger players out there? Because in your market, I assume it was competitive, and the bigger ones had a lot of resources behind them, and experience and the right people. So how did you manage to compete against the bigger players that have been there for years and years with so many resources
behind them? By being innovative, disruptive, and adding value. Remember, being a smaller business trying to compete with a bigger business means that you're much more flexible, that you can maneuver much easier, you can be much more dynamic in your approach. Now, the great thing about noisy industries or busy, overcrowded industries like plumbing and heating is the fact that they've been doing it the same way for so long, and nobody's waking up and going, is anybody going to change this? And then I came along and was like, right, this has been going on like this for so long. Nobody's prepared to change. Nobody's prepared to do anything different. So I'm going to add value to the product so that we're going to be selling, so it's much better than theirs. And then we're going to be much more attractive in our approach. And then we will win. I mean, I built Impro Boiler Model from 2016, standing start, to 2020. From to a 150-man business, £1 million in sales a month nationally in 3 years. So, you know, we did that by doing exactly what I've just said. You know, things like our lead time. If we went and quoted for a new system, then we'd fit it in 48 hours. British Gas for 4 weeks. So the customer would buy from us based on speed. Like, that was about being much more entrepreneurial and having much more resources and attacking it in the right way. So don't be scared of big players. Don't be scared of small players. You go into that industry and you disrupt it. You change the way that it's done. And you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You haven't got to be the new iPhone or the new iPad or whatever it is. You just got to look at it and go, right, he does this, this, and this. I'm going to add this and this. And then it looks like I've reinvented the wheel, because it's a new industry. It's a new product in itself. And then people are like, whoa, these guys are changing the game. But actually, all we've done is improve what's already there.
Yeah. And later on, so with Improgress, you actually you got to a stage where you sold it. So what was that whole experience like for you? And what made you want to start a new business after that?
So we sold because we hit quite challenging times. The market was changing. It was, you know, it was, we got quite big and we were competing with British Gas, and there's only so far you can go without additional finance. So I decided that it was the right time for me to get out. I didn't want to run the company anymore. I'd been in the industry for 15 years. I wasn't passionate, motivated, turned on by it anymore. Once we hit national, I'd done what I set out to do. I wanted to build a national business, and I didn't want to keep going. I wanted to move, you know, and I wanted to reinvent myself and do something else. So I basically decided to get out, sold it. It was crazy. I mean, look, my life now, if I imagine me running Infragas going into this crisis, I got out in December. It would have been hell. It would have been hell. I know the company that they've got now is on hold, and, you know, thank God I'm not doing it now. But, you know, I got to a point where I was 7 days a week from 6 a.m. till 10 o'clock at night. It was very, very difficult for me. It was non-stop. It was very challenging, very difficult. So, you know, I was happy to move on. And then I decided to launch a coaching business straight away. It was natural progression. Saw a gap in the market. Took that to £30,000 in sales a month within, like, 4 weeks of starting it. So, you know, I hit a good thing quite quickly. And now... and that just got money flowing back into the It kept me busy, so I wasn't just sat around doing nothing. And it allowed me the opportunity to decide about who I wanted to become. And I still haven't fully decided yet. It's only April, and I'm only 3 months away from where I was. So now I want to go international. I'm focusing on building my clothing line. I'm focusing on building my new personal development business, Power to Succeed. To trade mastermind. We'll keep growing that, but at a slower level, when I'll be bringing in people to help me with that. I don't want to stay in the construction industry really too much longer. So we're going to be looking at delivering an international business over the next 12 to 24 months.
So tell us about what you're working on currently, and how's it going?
Okay, so at the moment we are putting together an online business, so an online personal development business, all about courses online. I launched an events business about 4 weeks ago on the day that they stopped mass gatherings, and that really put that to a halt, so that wasn't ideal. And now we've pivoted and we're going to flip it all online, so we're going to be doing courses on how to start, create and make your own podcast, and we're going to be doing courses on how to show businesses that are in trouble right now how to use their expertise to become coaches and coach other businesses rather than running the business. We're going to do mastermind courses, sales courses, and really just bring and start to use my brand as an apprentice winner of Forbes, as a CEO of a national company, and put that branding behind the business courses, because nobody else in the UK is doing that, or with the same type of brand or size of brand. So I'm going to use that to sell and generate lots of online revenues, add lots of value to people. Everybody's in their home right now, so anybody looking to start a business, they'll be looking at adding value to people in the home. Can you do to make, entertain, to educate, and to add value?
And where can they find this? Do you have a website or?
The Power to Succeed's not up yet. Just keep following me on Instagram at Mr. Joseph Valente, and stay tuned, and there'll be lots of stuff coming out soon.
Cool, perfect. So I'm going to ask you now a bit of a different hypothetical question. If it was many years from now, and like it's the last day for you, and all the LinkedIn posts, the videos you've made, all your books are erased for whatever reason, and you can write down three things of everything you know about life, business, or whatever it may be, three things that you would leave to the world of your biggest lessons, what would those three things be?
Okay, number one, whatever the mind can conceive and believe, the mind can achieve. So whatever you whatever happens in here, right, it can come true and it can happen and it can create. Imagination is everything. Number two is don't wait for opportunity, create it. Don't wait for opportunity, create it. Everything starts with a creation. And if you don't have opportunity, you must find it, and you must make it. if opportunity doesn't come and knock in, then build a door, as they say. And then finally, number three, remember the words, one day you will die, and let that strike fear from your mind and empower you to achieve all that you can be. Fear is what holds most people back. And in the face of death, okay, most fear is obliterated. So if you can understand what the fear of dying is like, then remember, nothing comes close to that. So you can go on to achieve whatever you want, and don't let that fear hold you back.
Cool. Perfect. And I'm going to move towards quick fire questions now, just to conclude. And I'm going to ask you some questions, and I just want your gut response. So the first thing that comes to your mind. Yeah, if you don't like the question too, you can pass. So the first question is, what are 1, 2, 3 books that have greatly influenced your life? And you mentioned Lord Sugar's one before, but do you have any other... are you a big, like, reader or...
Audiobooks,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what you see is what you get. Lord Sugar's, the 10x rule, Grant Cardone.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Drugs, Guns, and Power. Pablo Escobar's a biography written by his brother Roberto Roberto Escobar.
Cool. And if you could have a gigantic billboard anywhere with anything on it, metaphorically speaking, getting a message out to millions or billions of people, what would it say and why? It could be someone else's quote even.
a picture of me with a quote coming out of it saying, I am your leader.
Oh, yeah. Cool. And in the last 5 years, what have you become like better at saying no to, like distractions, invitations, and yeah, what has helped you saying no to things?
Not every opportunity is the right opportunity, and I suppose, you know, there's got to be something in it for both parties to make it worthwhile.
Yeah, cool, awesome. So I think we're going to leave it there. I think we've been able to cover a lot. And you've shared some really great insights and advice. So thank you once again. And yeah, I think you're a real inspiration. Really, like, at least you've really inspired me in my own journey. So
good man.
Yeah. Thank you so much for making that happen, and hope to speak again sometime soon.
Yeah. Cheers, guys. Take care.
Awesome. Thank you.